Questions or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Minutes are approved. Thank you. Are we, what do we think?
Thank you.
Thank you. We are joined by Diane Larson, Executive Director of Itasca County Housing and Redevelopment Authority. Are the two of you presenting together? The first, are we the first two?
I'm going to start and followed by Jill.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Hoffman. I am Diane Larson. I am the Executive Director at Itasca County HRA, and I am also the current president of Minnesota NARO, which stands for the National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials. Good morning to Chair Hausman and the entire committee, and thank you so much for the opportunity for us to be here today and tell you about the role of housing and redevelopment authorities in communities across Minnesota. Minnesota NARO is a membership organization comprised of 154 agencies across the state, serving about 100,000 families and seniors through various housing programs. Our membership runs the spectrum from larger agencies in the metro area to counties like my jurisdiction in northern Minnesota, Itasca County, or communities like Virginia, Alexandria, Worthington, or even multi-county HRAs like Southeast Multi-County HRA. According to state law, communities who have housing authorities must first adopt a, quote, resolution of need in order to establish a housing authority. Every housing authority in Minnesota is governed by a board of commissioners. Commissioners are typically community members that are appointed either by our county board or our city council. However, in some instances, that elected body can name themselves as commissioners of the housing authority. For the purposes of the presentation today, we are going to use the term housing authority as a collective title for government entities running housing programs. You will sometimes hear us called PHAs, public housing authorities, HRAs, housing and redevelopment authorities, and CDAs, community development agencies. The board and staff of housing authorities work together to accomplish our mission and work alongside many community partners. We partner in our communities extensively, including nonprofit organizations, faith communities, private developers, businesses, and many other local organizations. I hope you see in our presentation today the critical role that housing authorities play in helping our communities thrive and our programs helping citizens in each part of the state through that entire housing continuum from homeownership, from homelessness all the way to homeownership. I'm going to talk just briefly here about who we serve. There is a housing authority in communities across the state in every legislative district. And as you heard 2 weeks ago in testimony, there are 580,000 households in our state who pay more than 30% of their income on housing in Minnesota. We call that cost burdened, and housing authorities administer several housing programs that are critical in reducing this number of cost burdened households. 121 of our agencies administer the Housing Choice Voucher Program, and there are 20,000 public housing units in communities across our state. Our speakers today are going to talk more specifically about who we serve, but in addition to our residents and participants, I wanted to point out that housing authorities are working extensively with private rental landlords in our rent assistance programs, including the state's Bridges program, where we can serve persons with a mental illness by providing them rental assistance and supportive services. We work with local companies to complete capital improvement projects on our public housing. And, of course, the people we serve all contribute to the local economy either by working or by supporting local businesses. In 84 of our 87 counties in the state, there's a shortage of affordable and available units for extremely low-income renters. So housing authorities also play a critical role in working with local developers in our communities, where we serve as a catalyst in the creation and the preservation of affordable housing, which ultimately leads to new investment in our community. As Chair Hausman mentioned, we do have four speakers today. We're going to talk about three broad categories on the housing spectrum. And, of course, we're going to focus for you on the state resources that are very critical to the programs that we administer and the people that we serve. I've started to speak on the role of housing authorities, and shortly I'm going to give a brief example from my community of how we've built some housing for homeless in the northern part of the state. Next, Jill Bankston, who is sitting to my left, will talk about the importance of general obligation bonds for publicly owned housing. And she's going to introduce our third speaker, Lori Lemke, who is a resident of Lakeview Apartments in Willmar, Minnesota. Finally, Barbara Dacey, the executive director of the Washington County CDA, is going to talk about various rental and home ownership programs that help to create stable housing and for moderate income persons in Minnesota. Housing authorities in Minnesota are governed by state statute, and we've got a section of that up on your screen, primarily Chapter 469. Although each housing authority can be different in the state because we're each serving as a local entity, we're addressing the needs of our community with the tools available, we all, or most of us, administer federally funded programs that many of you are familiar with. I've mentioned a couple of those, the Public Housing Program and the Housing Choice Voucher Program, and also rural development programs. We estimate that through these federal programs, we are serving about 60,000 households across the state. Although a majority of our programs, or although housing authorities administer federal programs, Minnesota and the resources in Minnesota play a critical role in helping us to address housing needs throughout the state. State housing programs like bonding programs, the rental assistance programs offered through Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, the low-income housing tax program, homeownership programs, and of course programs aimed at ending homelessness are all very important to the work that we do. Before I turn it over to Jill, I want to talk briefly about a development in the city of Grand Rapids where my agency collaborated with Severn other agencies to address homelessness and affordable housing needs in our community. This development is called Beacon Hill, and like many others in the state, it demonstrates the level of private and public investment in communities. We opened Beacon Hill in the fall of 2016. It is a 48-unit development. It is a permanent supportive housing project where we are providing supportive services to residents with multiple barriers to maintaining stable housing. Such barriers can include struggles with substance abuse, criminal records, or persistent mental health issues. You will notice in the picture on your screen in the upper right-hand corner, if you can see it, of the development there, we have 10 units designated for homeless persons and 10 units designated as housing with supports, formerly known as group residential housing. We partner with Northland Counseling Center in our community to provide 24-hour, 7-day staff in that apartment building portion of this development to respond to our residents' needs. In addition, the development includes 28 townhome units targeted towards working families in our community. And those townhome units in the picture you can see border the ring road that goes through the property. So in this one project alone, we're being able to serve disabled individuals and families, homeless individuals and families, and providing affordable housing for working families. In the development of this project, we were able to leverage the state's housing infrastructure bond investment with an additional $2.4 million in private equity and an additional $300,000 from the Blandin Foundation to ensure the ongoing delivery of supportive services to our residents. Itasca County HRA also continues to leverage federal resources in this project every month by the provision of rental subsidy to about 17 families in the development. As I stated very early in my presentation, in order to support this level of development in our community, we partnered with six different agencies, and I want to just quickly name them because they're just such a variety of partners that you might not think would be involved in housing. So they included our supportive service partner, Northland Counseling Center, Grace House, our only homeless shelter in Itasca County, Itasca County Health and Human Services, Hootaska Community Action, Itasca County Probation, and the Minnesota Department of Corrections. In addition, both Itasca County and the City of Grand Rapids participated financially through the write-down of land cost for the project and the forgiveness of interest and penalties on back-owed taxes on the piece of property. We have even partnered on the ownership with both the HRA and our service provider having ownership roles. The general contractor on this development was a Minnesota-based company, and of the 24 subcontractors, I went back and looked, and only one was not a Minnesota business. In fact, I'd like to share locally that five of our subcontractors were Grand Rapids local businesses. So the impact, the economic impact to my community not only included the development itself, but the contractors who stayed overnight in our local hotels and ate at our local restaurants. Beacon Hill really has been a great project for our community, and the state played a critical role in that. At this point, Chair Hausman, would you like me to open it up for questions or turn it over to Jill?
Before we move on, Representative Beshear.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to our testifier, was first of all, thank you for coming down today and for the presentation. It's very informative. I was very happy to hear that most of the money is being given right back into the local community. I was wondering, as you folks are doing the work there, are you covered by prevailing wage guidelines when doing the construction work?
Representative Fisher and Chair Hausman, yes, the entire project for Beacon Hill did use prevailing wages, and part of what required that was some of the ongoing federal subsidy that we were going to have in the project, so that directed that and required that, so the entire project was subject to prevailing wages.
A follow-up?
Just a follow-up comment. I thank you for that information. That's one of the things I've always found is when taking a look at prevailing wage, or some people say, oh, prevailing wage increases cost. But what I take a look at is prevailing wage is putting money directly into the local economy that helps make the living wages higher so that people can have affordable living standards. And I think this is one great example of seeing how all that money goes into local communities in areas where they don't have a lot of high-paying jobs. So I think that's a great thing that we should keep in mind on the prevailing wage area.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. And then we're ready to move on. And please, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Hausman, members of the committees. My name is Jill Bankson. I'm Executive Director of the Candiota County Housing and Redevelopment Authority in Wilmer, Minnesota. Public housing provides a home to our most vulnerable community members, including seniors, children's veterans, and people with mental or physical illness and disabilities. 95% of public housing units are over 35 years old. Federal funding cutbacks for capital investments have declined over the years and simply are not enough to meet the needs of updating systems to current code. General obligation bonds for public housing provides funding for large capital needs, such as replacing roofs, elevators, windows, and HVAC equipment. These improvements ensure that current energy, building, and fire codes are met so that operating costs are minimum, and more importantly, that our tenants are safe and secure. Minnesota NARL appreciates the past bipartisan support of this program since 2012. Postponing capital investments for properties can negatively affect financial viability and affect resident well-being. Especially important are the improvements that tenants cannot see, which keeps them safe and secure. On the screen, you'll see some before and after pictures on the left side that show several unrated plumbing chases were discovered, which means the enclosures for the piping had to meet current fire code and also had to be properly separated at each floor to meet code. The second example portrays the before and after updated shower stalls, which were expanded to provide seating as well as handheld shower heads. A majority of our clients are elderly and disabled, so these improvements are much appreciated. Lakeview Apartments in Wilmer is an example of a preservation project using state GO bonds and HRA funds. Located in Wilmer, it's an 8-story building housing 127 households. It was a $2,484,750 rehab project that used $1,906,818 state GO bonds through Minnesota Housing's POP program and $577,932 in HRA funds. With this funding, we were able to replace all the copper water piping, galvanized water piping, all the system isolation valves to be able to shut off stacks, and floors. We replace all the kitchen and bathroom faucets with low-flow faucets, replace all bathroom shower units, sinks, cabinets, flooring. We installed energy-efficient lighting in the bathrooms. We did fire safety improvements, handicap accessibility unit improvements in the bathrooms, tub rooms, and public restrooms, and we abated asbestos. Chair Hostman, at this point, we would, if it's okay with you, we would be ready for our resident to testify.
Questions of Ms. Bengston before we move on, and that is Lori Lemke.
Lori Lemke, yes.
If she joins you at the table, we'll... Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. I'm Lori Lemke, and I'm a resident of the Lakeview apartment complex in Wilmer, Minnesota, Kandy, Ojai County.
Thank you for being here so early on a snowy, cold morning.
It's nice to be here. I started out in the year 2009. I was in an accident where I ended up having to have my left leg amputated, which ended up over various things made it so I needed to get some handicap housing. In the city, when I went in this in 2009 looking for handicap housing in the Twin Cities, it was a 5 to 10 year waiting list. So I had decided, I looked around and, headed towards Wilmer. I was going to go to Olivia, but they didn't have jobs, so I went to Wilmer. And I ended up staying in a hotel for 14 months because there was not enough handicap housing. During this time, my apartment was being renovated so that with the new showers and all that, but I lived in a hotel for 14 months. So that's part of the reason why we need more housing. There's not enough available. My apartment that I'm in now is absolutely wonderful. I have the wide doorways. I have hardwood floors. I have a roll-in shower, which is wonderful. It's perfect. It's big enough to be able to get a wheelchair in and move around, and I'm very appreciative to be living there.
Questions of Ms. Lemke?
I'm sorry?
I just was checking whether committee members had any questions of either Ms. Lemke or Ms. Benson. The comment you made about 5 to 10 year waiting list, that's the similar story I hear. I certainly in Minneapolis and St. Paul.
I just checked like last week, and it's still 5 to 10 year waiting list.
And it almost feels as though that means there is no public housing, because of course, with a waiting list of that length, it becomes out of reach for most. The slide that I think bears repeating of the one titled Preservation Support. Because there's good news there, but it shows how much the unmet need is. Since 2012, 26% of all public housing units have been significantly improved. We have a long ways to go. And who's the population? 64% of households residing in public housing are headed by seniors or those with disabilities, and about one-third are children, and the average income is just a little over $16,000. So I think that one slide just helps to illustrate what you're describing, and that is the need is great. There is insufficient at this point.
Yeah, it's like waiting 14 months to get a place to live it's kind of sad, because there's a lot of disabled people. A lot of disabled people in Wilmer, and we need to have housing for them, because...
Representative Hornstein has a question.
Thank you, Ms. Lemke, for your presentation. In your experience, what do those individuals and families do who are waiting? What is their situation, the folks that are waiting for that housing? What is their situation?
I don't know. I know we have a couple organizations that put people up in hotels. I myself had to pay my out-of-pocket myself at the hotel I'm at. We have a couple organizations that put them up in hotels, and other than that, I don't know what they're doing after that. I don't know if they're staying in hotels or what they're doing.
Follow-up.
No, thank you.
Ms. Bankston, do you have further presentation?
Yes, Chair Houseman, if it's okay to proceed. Thank you. In addition to preserving the existing housing affordability stock with federal subsidies, housing authorities have to use a variety of approaches to create stable housing for families and individuals. Agencies use state resources in order to leverage federal and local resources to create safe and quality homes for families and individuals. As you will see in the examples that are to follow, creating and maintaining stable homes will mean rents that are more in line with employees' wages. Seniors can live affordably and receive services when they need them, and young families have a pathway to home ownership and the ability to sustain home ownership. 15th Street Flats is an example of a workforce housing project currently under construction in Willmar. Commonwealth Development Corporation is the owner developer of the mixed income of the 47 unit complex for mixed income households, and this will be completed in the year fall 2019. The HRA will manage the project upon completion. The project was financed through the use of low income housing tax credits and a Minnesota Housing First Mortgage. It will have a mixture of bedroom sizes and households earning up to 60% median income. Rents will range from $564 for a one-bedroom unit to $988 for a three-bedroom unit. Prior to Commonwealth applying for low-income housing tax credits, the developer met many times with the city and community groups to receive input into the design and planning of the project. Upon completion, the community will have additional affordable housing available for its workforce, as well as supportive housing for disabled and homeless households. In 2015, a study of housing needs in Candy Ohio County was commissioned by the HRA, in which it was determined that 457 additional housing units need to be developed in the county. This project will assist in meeting a small portion of that need. Chair Houseman, I am finished at this point, and we're ready for our next.
Any further questions? Thank you for being with us, Representative Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Bankston, I had a question about your experience with HRAs or housing authorities supporting naturally occurring affordable housing or preservation of naturally occurring affordable housing. I, as a council member in the city of Richfield and an HRA member, we've kind of ventured into this territory in the last few years for the very first time. Because of the great need we've seen in our community in terms of preserving, low-rent housing that doesn't have federal subsidy. But it was uncharted territory. There were some challenges. I wonder if you could comment on what you're hearing from HRAs throughout the state that are kind of wrestling with this issue and what challenges there might be to support that important activity that we need.
Ms. Bankston, any response?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative. So, yes, preserving our existing rental housing stock is just so imperative. In our experience, we try to tap into the DEED Small Cities Development Program funding. We have used that on rental housing rehab and low-income owner-occupied rehab and commercial rehab. We find that as a very useful tool, but as I'm sure you're aware, the tools and financing for doing preservation are so limited. But in our experience, that has been a very useful tool for us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and we'll move on to Barbara Dacey, Executive Director of Washington County. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Barbara Dacey, Executive Director for the Washington County Community Development Agency, and Madam Chair and members of the committee, it's an honor to be here today. In addition to the workforce housing example that Jill just presented, I have five more examples of our role in communities, and then after that I will be happy to answer your questions. So our next example is about affordable senior housing. As you all know, last year the bonding bill included language to add affordable senior housing as an eligible use for housing infrastructure bonds. Mesa House in Mora and the Glen at Valley Creek in Woodbury were previously selected by Minnesota Housing as pilot projects for this new approach for affordable senior housing. These developments are not assisted living. They are designed for individuals who can live independently. However, both developments leverage relationships with healthcare community partners to provide services to the seniors when their needs change or as they age. In other words, when they need them. Each development, for example, has a senior service coordinator on board, and the community partners can step in when needed to provide in-home care or other types of services when necessary. Mesa House was developed by the Mora HRA and contains 24 rental homes, and it opened this past summer. The Glen at Valley Creek has 42 rental homes, and it will be open this upcoming summer. All of these are affordable to seniors up to 50% AMI, or about $35,000 in the metro area, and it's a little lower in Mora. But both developments have a portion of the units available to very low-income seniors who pay no more than 30% of their income. The Glen has a set aside for homeless veterans. Ultimately, the goal is for seniors to remain largely independent, delaying the need for the most cost-intensive housing. Our next example is redevelopment. In this example, the city of Matamidi asked my agency to redevelop a vacant restaurant site for affordable senior housing. And the site had been vacant for several years, and the city requested a new anchor, if you will, at the west end of their downtown and wanted another housing option for its seniors. So ultimately, we determined that the site was contaminated by the construction debris from the demolition of the former powerhouse for the Wildwood amusement site and trolley line, which was right across the street from the site near White Bear Lake. 671 truckloads removed over 14,000 tons of construction debris contamination and was replaced with clean fill. So as the result of the redevelopment, in addition to the affordable senior housing, was the benefits of replacing old utility lines, improving traffic safety, a storm collection which protected the nearby wetland, and a new pedestrian and bike connection to a plaza area in front of the building. So seniors and the local community now have a safer way to walk and bike to the businesses downtown. So construction on this development was completed in 2016.
Representative Hornstein, was your question to this slide? Or?
Yeah, just to this in general. Thank you very much. So for all three of these developments, what's the federal role in this? I know at one time the Section 202 program used to help with these types of projects. Is that still an option in terms of funding these kinds of projects?
Ms. Stacy?
Madam Chair and Representative, the Low-Income Housing Tax Credit Program, which is a federal program, is the platform by which much of the affordable housing is completed. In Jill's development, that was the credits were administered by Minnesota Housing. Piccadilly Square was 4% tax credit development, but the federal funds involved in the Piccadilly Square development the Glen at Valley Creek included the Community Development Block Grant Program and the Home Investment Partnership Program. But the amount of that federal contribution is anywhere from $300,000 to $400,000, which is a very small percentage of the total construction costs. So there is some role, and it's needed, but in proportion to the other sources in these developments, it's not as great, whereas the Section 202 program provided all of the construction costs and the operating subsidies.
Thank you. So is that program, you know, my understanding is that it still exists, but it's kind of a shell of what it used to be. Is that, would that be an accurate description?
Ms. Duffy?
Madam Chair and Representative, the funding for the Section 202 program has drastically been reduced, and it's also my understanding that that funding is available only for nonprofits. And second, it's a competitive program, so because of the limited funding, the ability for communities across the country to be able to access those funds is very small.
Thank you.
Representative Fisher has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Ms. Stacy. Thank you. I'm familiar with your project out there. I was excited to see that going up in an area that had been somewhat blighted from deterioration over the years. One of the questions I have is, I know there's quite a few seniors in there, and is as the population ages, fewer and fewer of them are able to drive and have their mobility. So how do you folks address the mobility issues? And by mobility, I mean people being able to get out to the grocery stores and that type of thing in your area.
Ms. Stacy.
Madam Chair and Representative Fisher, the CDA contracts with a local transportation provider for a weekly service. So the current provider is a company called New Tracks.
Okay. Please continue.
Okay. The third example is the home ownership programs. As you know, there is a synergy between the rental market and the home ownership market. One feeds the other. So right now, state statute requires 31% of the housing bond pool for single-family bonding programs, which is good policy because it strikes a balance with the multiple family bonding programs. So this bonding authority also provides the funding for the Minnesota City's participation program. And this program provides at or below market rate home loans and down payment assistance for low and moderate income first-time home buyers. So communities across the state see this tool as a way to attract families to put down community roots. Many of our members participate in this and program, and some, like my agency, provide home stretch, home buyer education, and even one-on-one counseling to make sure that new homeowners are well prepared for home ownership. The state has the HECAT funds, which is very important in order to provide home buyer education and counseling activities. In Washington County, our median sale price is higher than most other counties in the state. So this program provides a pathway for our young and diverse, provides a pathway to home ownership for our young and diverse workforce. And at the same time, because of this ecosystem, most of these families are coming from rental homes, so the program creates new opportunities for renters. The fourth example is oftentimes housing authorities work with community land trusts and Habitat for Humanity. HRAs may be involved in selling the land acquired through a redevelopment effort at a reduced cost to create affordable housing or providing gap financing through federal and local programs. In Washington County, Habitat has 163 homes. So we have worked with them directly on redeveloped sites, and we provide gap financing. And as you know, with Habitat, every development sparks community involvement from businesses and nonprofit or organizations alike. Similarly, Two Rivers Community Land Trust owns over 50 homes in the county and has either constructed new homes or acquired existing homes and rehabilitated them. So housing infrastructure bonds help land trusts with the needed capital to create these homes. And my final example is the community rehab programs that housing authorities administer, and Jill referred to it earlier. So over 35 communities and authorities in the state implement Minnesota Deeds Small Cities Development Program in their communities. So this provides federal funds for low and moderate income households to rehab owner-occupied, rental, single-family, and multiple family housing. In addition, this funding source can assist businesses to rehab their buildings to improve safety, health and safety issues, or complete facade improvements. So pictured on the right is a building in downtown Brainerd, and the picture on the left is pretty obvious. It's a brand new furnace. So in addition, housing authorities sometimes act as approved lenders of Minnesota Housing's rehab loan or the emergency and accessibility loan programs. And these programs assist low-income homeowners in financing basic home improvements that affect safety, energy efficiency, or accessibility in their homes. So taken together, these rehab programs rejuvenate commercial areas, but they also sustain stable housing for homeowners and renters alike and keep the housing supply up to code and marketable, which is very important for communities with limited housing options. So in closing, Madam Chair and members of the committee, we want to leave you with these takeaways. First, as you all know, housing is a part of Minnesota's infrastructure like roads or bridges. The residential housing stock of a community constitutes the majority of its community's tax base, but also the availability of the housing is critically linked to prosperous local economic development. Second, providing quality affordable housing to families and seniors smartens our use of public resources. As you are well aware, studies have shown that when individuals move into affordable housing, health care outcomes improve, emergency room visits go down, and people can focus their resources on education and job training. When families and seniors are no longer paying 50% of their income on housing, they are better able to meet other needs. Third, housing authorities reflect the community at large. We work hand in hand with private and nonprofit community organizations in much of what we do. As a result, our work contributes to the local economy. Finally, the policies and resources that the state implements are crucial to the community's success, and they are well leveraged by private, federal, regional, and local investments. On behalf of our membership, we are very grateful for your support and the opportunity to speak with you today, and we're happy to answer questions.
Representative Munson has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question on the program. Thank you, by the way, for this presentation. What are your biggest constraints for these programs, above and beyond funding, obviously? Do you deal with restrictions on the type of labor you can hire, or do you have issues with bids from contractors? I know that the availability of work, especially in rural Minnesota, to find labor to work on projects is really difficult to find in this time. But do you deal with, you know, restrictions on finding bids or getting quotes from contractors? And then could you speak a little about the requirements embedded in the program, maybe that push your project above and beyond the existing building code, but, you know, like when it comes to green initiatives and things that are put into this program?
Ms. Stacy.
Madam Chair and Representative, I'll speak from the metro area perspective, and I'll let Jill or Diane address the remainder of the state. In terms of bidding, we have not had any complications with that. We our bids for construction typically have had multiple bids, so we feel that we're getting a robust price for the construction that we need. In terms of other state restrictions, my agency is unique. We are a sub-allocator of the tax credit program. Much of our policy does follow the requirements from Minnesota Housing, and we do require the design criteria. We are evaluating that in terms of the impact on developments, but in short, I cannot think of any specific restriction that is constricting our efforts at this time.
And did you want to, was there anyone who wanted to address that from Greater Minnesota? Ms. Bengston?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. My comments kind of echo Barbara's. We have not had problems with bidding. I, you know, have had some experience that not problems with bidding, but once a project is going, sometimes the contractors are having difficulty with finding labor to keep the project going. Everything's always finished on time, but hiring and keeping people has sometimes been a problem. And we also institute any kind of green communities requirements into our projects, too. We like to have things that are energy efficient, water efficient, that type of thing.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the last summary slide, you talked about various partnerships, and my question deals with both your developments in Greater Minnesota and in the metro. To what extent do you collaborate with transit agencies and paratransit for your residents? It seems like we've got a real challenge, with that statewide. And is that, you know, part of the calculation once you've, you know, made these developments?
Ms. Stacy?
Madam Chair and Representative, in Washington County, suburban access to transit is a challenge. So we have had to forge our own partnerships on the transportation issue. And as I said earlier, we do seek out a provider to make sure that our seniors can get to the services that they need. We also, when we are evaluating sites and when private developers are evaluating sites, they do pay attention to the access to transit locations. We did have a developer complete an affordable workforce housing site in Newport right next to a park and ride site at Highway 61 and 494. So it is a critical issue. To the extent that transit is available, we're trying to maximize that. As you also know, there's a lot of studies about the Gold Line and other transportation corridors in the county that lead into the downtowns.
To the Transportation Finance Chair, I'm glad she made the East Metro case for lack of public transit.
No, I mean, we're very well aware of that, Madam Chair. And I guess if you or anyone on the panel could comment about Greater Minnesota, and is that still the, or are these decisions also made, and what are the partner, you know, with transit in mind, and what are the partnerships that you have?
Ms. Bengston, are you able to?
Madam Chair, Representative, with all our developments, too, and when we're trying to do something new, we're trying to bring the existing bus system that exists in the county into those projects. So all our apartment projects are bus stops, and they run several times a day. However, we do not have any kind of partnerships with a private bus company or anything like that. We rely solely on the city, on the bus system that exists in town.
Follow up.
And thank you very much, Madam Chair. And do you feel that that this is are these several trips a day adequate, or are your residents feeling that they need additional service?
Ms. Bengston.
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you. I'm looking at our resident who's going.
It's always helpful to have the resident here.
Exactly. I think that is a really good idea, Madam Chair.
So, I know. I mean, I know there could be more. Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative
Hutt. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to thank everyone for coming today. It was kind of a rough travel day, so I hope you all, some of you came last night and didn't have to worry about it this morning. But my husband and I have several rental homes, and we have several single moms. And one of the suggestions I would have is that and an inspection, we had bought a new refrigerator for her that we now find out has a bad seal. And it took us a longer time to get the seal than it did for the reinspection, and they were actually going to move her to a more expensive housing place because of the bad seal. So my comment would be, when we talk about affordable housing and how we can keep the cost down, I would also say that maybe HRA could also look at some of the rules, mandates, whatever, so that we're not moving people out to, it was $200 more a month for the house they were going to move her at. And we fought it and said, come on, guys, it's a seal on a refrigerator. It's noted for being a bad seal, so now we order two at one time so we have an extra one. But I just would say, I would ask you to also be very aware of some of your rules, mandates, whatever you want to call them, so that we can keep people in more affordable homes. I was really glad that they would work with us, and we got the seal replaced probably a week or two after we got it. But like I said, we now know we have to order two because that refrigerator is notorious for having a bad seal. So just thank you all. What a great presentation. And I think there's more happening than we are aware of. And it's nice to have folks and residents come and say, you know, this is a good thing. And I think we can sort of thank the baby boomers for more accessible housing as well, because their demands are more accessible. And as the housing market sees what accessible means, they're embracing it more than ever. So I'm really glad that I'm hoping we're making advances in that area and making houses more accessible, just because it makes sense and not just because there's a disability or something like that. So I just want to thank you all for being here today.
Thank you.
And I hope we can talk again sometime soon.
And any response any of you might have to the observations?
Yeah.
Thank you. I think we have no further questions. Now, members, it might be helpful to know that we organized this particular hearing in keeping with NARO's Day on the Hill, which is today. And I wonder if anyone might be prepared to just speak to that, your activities for the day and any organizing around this that you're doing, or how many appointments you've made with members. Do we have anybody who might be prepared to?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, so I believe we have 35 people here today, and at least that amount of appointments with folks here in the building and over at the Senate. So we're going to start our meetings at approximately noon today. We're gathering up in room 400 to hear a little presentation and get organized, and we look forward to meeting with all of you individually.
And I would just echo what Representative Tice mentioned, and that is, I think we have another. Did you want to join us at the table?
Well, I was Shannon Guernsey with the Minnesota NARA, and I know we have a number. This was all optional for people before our day at the Capitol, considering it was so early. So I know we have a lot of folks who are attending. So maybe those folks can raise their hands.
Yes.
All across the state. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being here.
Yay.
Appreciate it.
Thought you might want to know.
Well, it's helpful, I think, these days on the Hill for members who aren't on the committee. You bring the education that you brought to us to the offices. And as she said, when we know we have partners all over the state who are working on some of the same things that are concerning us in this committee, it gives us hope and encouragement.
Thank you very much.
Are there any concluding comments any of you would like to make? I think we've moved the minutes. I think we are ready to adjourn. Meeting is adjourned.